You're listening to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you in-depth interviews with the creators and stars of the hottest shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'll be talking to the puppeteer Basil Twist, the mastermind behind Symphonie Fantastique, a surreal show set to Berlioz's 1830 symphony, in which puppeteers manipulate fabric, feathers, fishing lures, glitter, bubbles, and a lot more, all in a 1,000-gallon tank of water. It's a viewing experience that's been likened to an underwater ballet or an experimental film. It might sound like the kind of artsy downtown thing that'll never catch on with audiences, but the current Symphonie Fantastique is the 20th anniversary production of a show that Twist premiered in 1998 at Here Arts Center, the downtown Manhattan venue where the show is back after touring the world. Since 98, Twist has gone on to win a MacArthur Genius Grant and work in theater, dance, and opera across the globe, including on Broadway, where he's designed puppets for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Oh Hello on Broadway, The Pee Wee Herman Show, and The Addams Family. He's here in the studio with me to talk about all that and more. Hey, Basil. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
So it's been 20 years since you first did Symphonie Fantastique. So congratulations on that, first of all.
Thank you.
Did you ever think that it was something that would survive as long as it did?
I didn't know if it... I mean, I had no idea. When we first did it, I thought it was just going to be like a little weird experimental thing we did for 2 weeks.
Right.
And 20 years ago, it ended up running for almost 2 years.
Right.
So I've packed it away, and I bring it out every once in a while.
Yeah.
But the last time I did it was 6 years ago in Washington, D.C. So I don't know. It's the show that just keeps on chugging along.
Do you enjoy coming back to it every time you do?
I do. I love it.
Why?
It's a fun show.
Yeah.
It is a very essential sort of definition of puppetry in my eyes. Mm. This sort of abstraction, this essence, this really pure, non-representational, weird. It's a little excessive and it's all wet, and right. That's fun.
Does it mean something different to you every time you come back to it, do you find?
I mean, it means something different to me now that I'm, like, looking at it right. from 20 years later.
Right.
That it's just, it's, like, so surreal, because it's the same show, and it seems like, I mean, I made it when I was in my 20s, and I'm like, wow, how did I do that? And it still seems to please and feel fresh. And that's just wild.
Right.
It's like, I didn't even have a cell phone then.
Barely existed at the time, right?
Yeah. No. And so it's like the show, the world is so different. And when I say 20 years, I kind of can't believe it. But then when I really started working on it and seeing, like, oh, God, all this stuff that I used to buy on Canal Street and all those stores are closed now and I can't get them and I can't. It's like, wow, it really has been 20 years.
Yeah.
But the show feels fresh. And so, I don't know, makes me happy.
And so where did that initial idea come from? Where did underwater come from?
Well, the first idea was I really wanted to make something abstract. So that's the kind of the most sort of important thing about this show for me, is that it's, most puppetry is representational.
Right.
Most puppets look like something else. And instead, I just took the raw materials and kind of tried to make them come alive.
Right.
And I thought that I was going to do actually... I thought I was going to do only one part of it underwater. Symphonie Fantastique is in 5 parts, and I was going to do the third movement underwater. I had found a little aquarium.
That actually sounds even more complicated than you're doing right now,
that's
right?
That's way too complicated. So,
you found a little aquarium.
I found a little aquarium on the street near my studio in the West Village, and I brought it in, and I started playing with it, and it was cool. And I thought, ooh, this could be cool for part of a show. And so Symphonie Fantastique has five movements, and the third movement was going to be underwater. But actually, in the end, the water was so cool, and it's also so complicated to deal with because it's heavy and wet and messy and doesn't move around easily. I just wisely decided to put the whole show in this giant aquarium.
And it is 1,000 gallons now. It was 500 gallons the first time around. Is that right?
Yeah, it was 500 gallons 20 years ago. And I made another production that opened in San Francisco a year later. That's where I'm from. And so this is that physical production. So this physical production is 19 years old.
Wow.
Still pretty old.
And are you still using the same pieces of fabric? And
basically, wow. I mean, there are some things that are replaced, right. But a lot of it is the same, is exactly the same stuff.
And when you said to here, which for people who don't know here, it's a sort of scrappy downtown arts center. Maybe a little less scrappy now than it was 20 years ago, but not much.
It's now a venerable downtown
scrappy
arts institution since it's celebrating its 25th anniversary.
Right, right. And so what did they, when you said, I want to get a giant tank of water and do an abstract puppet piece there, what did they say?
They were like, okay. I mean, they're so supportive of artists and their weird ideas, and particular things that don't fit into regular categories of dance, theater, music. And puppetry is always kind of in that space in between.
Yeah.
So sort of the original...
Well, you've worked in all of the above, right?
I have.
Genres, yeah.
I have, but I started in puppetry.
Right.
So like everything springs from that place of being a puppeteer, right. Which then it brings me to dance, it brings me to theater, it brings me to music or opera or ballet. Mm-hmm.
And so for people who haven't seen the show, describe some of the stuff you use to create the images in the water.
Well, the essential image is fabric underwater. That's the main star of the show, is a piece of fabric that's moving underwater, which is actually as simple as it sounds. It's exquisite. It's totally, it's super expressive. It's the most perfect dancer. And we're using this incredible piece of music, Symphonie Fantastique, which in this case now is being played live on a piano.
Oh yes, that's worth mentioning because it was recorded the first time around, right?
It was recorded before, but over the years I met this artist, Christopher O'Reilly, who's outstanding and an extraordinary musician, and he fell in love with the show, and he's part of the project, and he's performing the score live on the piano, and then just behind the piano, sort of soaring out of the belly of the piano, is this this imagery, which is all underwater fabric, bubbles, tinsel, feathers, light, anything that I could put underwater that would look cool. And really, you can put almost anything underwater and it looks cool.
Right.
And then it's all lit.
Light plays a big role.
Light also takes on a physical quality in the water. We put ink in the water. There's projections. There's mirrors. It's like a weird psychedelic light show in 3D. It looks like a really outrageous sort of screensaver or something, but it's all analog, live, and real. And it's actually a very kind of old-fashioned puppet show in one way, because there's this little curtain that goes up, and there's this, stage window, which is actually the side of the tank, and the puppeteers are hidden backstage making all
these... There are five of you, right?
There's five, yeah. And they're moving all this stuff through the water.
Right.
But you can't see them doing it.
Right.
So it's very, magical, transportive. People say it's very relaxing to them. Mm-hmm. There's not really a story. There's kind of a musical through line and a dramatic arc. And people just get lost. Like everything melts away is the idea.
And are you behind the curtain every night? I imagine not anymore.
I'm not anymore, although I'm there a lot, actually. I used to perform in it, and I love performing in it, but I thought, well, let me try and create it in a way so I'm not, it's not dependent on me. And I have a really great team of puppeteers. But I jump in, I go in once a week, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, because I just like being back there. It's super fun. It's
quite hectic. It is the opposite of the, I don't know, sort of soothing, sedate
pace. Yeah, it's totally, yes. It's like what you see in front is super smooth and sometimes, you know, fast-paced, but it's right. It's the water smooths everything out. Where backstage, it's like working in an insane, high, you know, fast-paced kitchen where everybody's like moving fast and ducking and throwing things to each other.
In very small spaces, I imagine.
In a very small space. And they're climbing above the tank and they swing in harnesses over the tank and it's super physical. Yeah. Especially since we made it a little bit bigger, it's as if you were smaller doing it.
Right.
So it's a great workout.
Yeah.
And you get wet.
And you're wearing a wetsuit through all this.
And you wear
is
a wetsuit,
true?
Yeah, because you get soaked doing it.
Because the water's cold, I imagine, yeah?
The water's cold. The colder water is clearer. It looks better.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. How do you think of the success of this show kind of changing what you went on to do in your career?
Well, I had a training as a puppeteer. I mean, I was into puppetry as a kid, and I actually went to this puppetry.
You went to school.
I went to a puppetry school in France.
Tell us the name.
The École Supérieure Nationale des Arts de la Marionnette.
And are you the only American to have graduated from there?
I am the only American to have graduated from the 3-year training program there. And so I came back to New York, and I was working with puppeteers, and I eventually was part of the Henson Puppet Festival. Which was happening at the Public Theater, which was a really extraordinary moment for puppetry and theater in the 90s. Mm. And I made it to the cover of the Puppetry Journal. And I thought I had, like, made it. Like, that was as far as I could possibly go. And then and that was with a solo show of mine that I had made in France. And
what was that called?
It was called the Arenade Show. Mm-hmm. And I played it at the Public Theater in the festival.
Does that festival still exist?
No.
Yeah,
it ended
in
2000. It was 5 festivals, and it was amazing. Mm. And there's nothing like it anymore. But it created an audience it educated an audience in puppetry. When I did Symphonie Fantastique, though, there was a whole different audience that came to see it. I had no idea, because the show spoke to, obviously, a puppetry audience, but it spoke to a dance audience and a visual arts audience and a music audience. And because it had this sort of, like, psychedelic nature, there was this, like, late-night shows that we had and this whole other crowd. And then, of course, there were children who would come to it. There was all these different audiences who came. It was this truly crossover piece in every way. And
let me just tell you that I was going back to look up, you know, on the first review of it in the New York Times, but there were, like, 3 or 4. It was like, you know, Ben Brantley doing the theater review, but then there was like a dance review and a music review, and it was like it got reviewed by every single section in the Times, it seemed like.
Which was totally, and that was unsolicited. That kind of just happened. So the show was this sort of phenomenon that happened, and particularly how it really impacted my career was I was using recorded music at the time, but people took note and said, wow, you've got a great sense of music. And I was immediately...
Have you always been interested in music?
Did
you know that about yourself, I guess?
I was kind of musical. I mean, my mother was musical. My grandfather was a band leader. And I used to sing and chorus and stuff in school. So right. I know I'm musical. But suddenly my next gig was at Lincoln Center. And right. I was...
What was that? Was that Petrushka? Or
that was Petrushka. Yeah. And so that was working with live musicians.
Which is sort of the opposite on the surreality scale of Symphonie Fantastique, right?
Well, I tried to do that because actually I've really tried to keep them guessing in my career and have all my... Whatever my show is, to have a new show be something really new and something different.
Right.
So Symphonie Fantastique was so abstract. And so Petrushka was absolutely super figurative, like high puppetry technique.
Marionettes dancing ballet, is what they call it, yeah.
And it was really like rigorous technique, like her toe had to point and
they were good dancers, though.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then that show was like invited to Jacob's Pillow and like into the dance world and stuff. So, but being, I guess, yeah, Symphony Fantastique opened up whole other worlds besides puppetry to me, particularly, and most particularly the music world. And it, what is so exciting is to finally like actually have it be performed live with an extraordinary classical artist.
One of the places that you ended up having worked now, so in following Symphony Fantastique, is on Broadway. You've done some shows with Broadway productions.
I have done a couple.
And what is that? How different or not different is it from doing a show at here?
It's so different. First of all, they're not my shows.
Right.
So I'm totally into doing a Broadway show of my own, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Mostly I'm brought in to help.
Right.
And so I'm peripheral to the thrust of the show. I kind of help bring the extra magic. So I worked on the Addams Family musical, and I helped out my friend Pee Wee Herman when he did his show on Broadway, and I did recently Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Right.
I also did something with the guys in Oh Hello.
You did Oh Hello, right?
I did the giant tuna sandwich nightmare sequence.
Yeah, there was a bit.
Which is a good credit.
It was, right?
But it's just, it's a very different, you know, Broadway doesn't have the same... you know, how Broadway, so the disciplines are so divided up, costumes, scenery, props, and I always fall in between and mess all that up. I don't have my, there's not a puppetry, you know, department, there's not a puppetry union, and so every puppet is sort of, is it a costume or is it a prop? And sometimes it's a scenic
thing.
That's
a really good question. What's the answer?
It depends on, it's a costume if it's worn.
Right.
And it's like, who's using it? Who is it? Is it something that a performer uses? Is it something that a stagehand uses?
Right.
And it's anyway, splitting hairs about that kind of stuff is challenging to the art form. Yeah. So puppetry has gotten a big, you know, foothold on Broadway, but it's mostly a lot of the biggest successes are ones where the puppeteers are visible, like obviously The Lion King,
right.
Avenue Q. War Horse
yeah.
where there is a total clear call on these are performers, they're performers and they're highly skilled. Whereas when you have a hidden performer, it starts to get a little more, there's just more gray area.
Yeah.
So, and I, as much as I'm sort of a out there avant-garde puppeteer, I'm old fashioned in that I really like to have the puppeteer being hidden. Mm. I like to do that in most of my shows. Mm.
Does more money make better puppets?
yes. No. I mean, it doesn't really. It needs to be, you know, used wisely. I mean, Broadway shows are more expensive, and you can do some cool stuff. But I have made most of my career being super resourceful. I'm by no means Spartan in what I do. My stuff is pretty excessive, all of my shows. But I do them on a shoestring, and I do them with what's around, and that's the mother of invention.
With shoestrings, also.
With shoestrings, right. Lots of them.
Yeah, right. You started to mention your parents before, but your family has a long history with puppetry. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Kind of. So my mother was a puppeteer when I was growing up in San Francisco.
In San Francisco, yeah.
She was more like an amateur puppeteer. I mean, she was like some other moms. They had a sort of social group that did puppets at hospitals and birthday parties. But then her father... my grandfather was a big band leader in the 30s and 40s, but he used puppets as part of his act.
Wow.
It's just like a bonus thing. He had these puppets of other famous band leaders like Harry James and Cab Calloway. And
did he play the band leaders?
He would operate them, yeah. And he had one of himself, too. And they were string marionettes in the kind of the cabaret style of Frank Paris, who was a sort of famous puppeteer at the time. Where he would just, you would see him, and he would bring the puppet out, and it would be kind of at his feet. And he died before I was born, but my grandmother, Dorothy, who I was close to, gave me those puppets when I was a kid.
Oh.
And they're on display at the Hero Arts Center.
At Hero, that's right.
At the theater, which has her name on
yep.
it, and where Symphony Fantastique premiered 20 years ago.
Which is the downstairs space
yes.
for people who
yeah.
have been there. Yeah. And so was it always a given then that you would go into puppetry? Was there any other... It's rare for someone to go to school for it.
There are puppeteers, even though I have this family history. It's in no way like there are like, you know, in Indonesia or in Sicily, there's
right.
like father to son. They pass the puppets down yeah. and it's the same, you know, it's this tradition that's being passed down. It was not at all like that.
Got it. Yep.
And my family was supportive. I'm really lucky to have awesome parents who are supportive of who I am and what I do, and there was no pressure to be a puppeteer from them at all. But they were totally supportive when I said, you know what, I think I want to pursue this, and they said okay. So I came to New York actually to start to in 88 and to start working in the world of puppetry. And I met Julie Taymor really early on.
Okay.
And she was doing Juan Derien.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I helped out with that. And I worked at Theater for the New City. And I worked
yeah.
with this group called the Puppet Company, which was this like this kids company.
Mm.
And I was part of the New York Puppet Guild, which still exists. And eventually I made my way to France to this, basically it's a conservatory that's dedicated to puppetry.
Are there any others in the world?
There are. Yeah. There are. I mean, there's the dedicated schools of puppetry are mostly in Europe,
okay.
and particularly
yep.
in Eastern Europe, where there was a real strong tradition of mm-hmm. large puppet theaters that needed a lot of puppeteers. So the sort of academies were created to sort of feed them. The in the United States, the main place to study puppetry is the University of Connecticut in Storrs has a venerable puppetry program started by Frank Ballard. And that's where really the puppeteers who come and work with me who went to UConn have the craft. Otherwise, people pick up puppetry, they just kind of like you pick it up.
Right.
You know, you apprentice, you sort of see someone, you learn from someone else, or people just figure it out in their, you know, in their basement.
Right. Where you mentioned UConn, where do you consider some of the most exciting puppetry happening these days?
I mean, the most exquisite puppetry is in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
It still is. It's the puppetry in Asia still has the sort of its ancient sort of sacred roots, and in Japan it's also it's very serious drama.
Is this Bunraku?
Bunraku, yeah. Just that the tradition is so it's so rigorous and it's so beautiful. It's not contemporary in any way. I'm so aware of what's happening in France. And just because of my time there, even though it was a long time ago, I still keep in touch. And that's actually where the reason why that school is there is because it's the sort of the headquarters of the International Puppetry Association, which is called UNIMA, which is part of UNESCO. And so there's a huge festival in France. There's a lot more obviously support for the arts there across the board, which means that puppetry benefits from that too.
Get some support.
Yeah.
Right. And so Symphony Fantastique is running through mid-July here. And then what's next for you? Where do you go from there?
I just won the Rome Prize. So
congratulations.
Thank you. So I get to go to the American Academy of Rome for a year, which I'm really excited about. So I'm going to go to Rome.
What will you do there?
I am not exactly sure. I mean, I had a proposal for a show that I'd like to work on. but I'm also open to just inspiration and gelato and things like that. There's something actually really beautiful about doing Symphony Fantastique again after 20 years and kind of that nice shape to a career, and to take a moment and step away and have this opportunity in Rome. I'm very grateful for it.
Well, have an excellent time. I can't wait to see what you come back with.
Thank you.
Thanks for talking to me. I really appreciate your time. That was Basil Twist, whose show Symphony Fantastique is now playing at Heer Arts Center through July 15th. On the next episode of Stagecraft, I'll talk to Matt Bomer and Andrew Rannells, two of the stars of the new Broadway revival of The Boys in the Band. Until then, see you at the theater.